Welcome to the Spoolcast. Luke Rablewski joins Adam Churchill in this follow-up to his virtual seminar, Organizing Mobile Web Experiences. Luke didn't have time to answer all the questions during the seminar, so we decided to address those remaining questions in this podcast. If you didn't attend the seminar, don't worry. There's plenty here for you, too. And now, here's Adam.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of the Spoolcast. Recently, Luke Rablewski presented a virtual seminar called Organizing Mobile Web Experiences. Luke's seminar, along with over 100 others that teach the tools and techniques you need to create great design, is now part of the UIE User Experience Training Library. Now, in this particular seminar, Luke detailed the latest in mobile design thinking and offered up solutions that will help you organize your websites and applications. He also showed what's coming next and, best of all, how to help your designs remain future-friendly. Hey, Luke, thanks for joining us again.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
Hey, for those that weren't with us that day, can you give us an overview of what you talked about?
Sure. Yeah. So we sort of focused on the art of organizing all your content and activities and sort of structure of websites and applications in an ever-increasing multi-device web. We talked about a number of things, but we sort of started out by outlining what are some of the things that mobile devices and the proliferation and heavy use of mobile that's going on today, what are the sorts of things that that influences when we start to think about traditional website navigation, menu systems, organizational structures. And when once we sort of nailed down where mobile takes us, we then built up from that mobile foundation to really create adaptive navigation and organizational experiences that support a whole range of devices. It's a pretty exciting space, I think, because while we focused on really organization and navigation, the techniques that we outlined can really apply to just about any component on the web, right? We sort of talked about nav and menus, but forms, content layout, any kind of interactive components, all these things can sort of have the mobile optimized perspective and then use that mobile foundation to extend out to a wide range of devices.
One of the things that came up early on in the seminar is there was a lot of talk about devices, and some folks were asking, does that mean specifically mobile, and does mobile equal phone, or does it include tablets? Can you speak to that a bit? And one of the questions that we didn't get answered during the seminar asked about interpreting the device usage graph based upon the answer there.
Yep. And boy, is it getting blurrier and hairier as we sort of go here. In that short little overview, I think this sort of outlines where we're going. It's very difficult now to really clearly sort of outline exactly what's a mobile device. You know, it was a lot easier back when we sort of had feature phones, and then out came the iPhone, and it was really the first sort of mobile computer on which you could browse the full web, right? That was easy to grok. It was this 3.5-inch screen. It was pretty much the only thing out there. But since then, what we've seen is mobile devices really spanning the range from, you know, like 2-inch screens all the way up to almost 7-inch screens. And when you start getting towards the 7-inch screens, like there's 6.8-inch phablets or fab tops or whatever, I don't even know what you want to call them these days, right? But they're combination smartphones and tablets. And from that sort of 6-inch range, they come down to 5.5-inch screens, things like the Galaxy Note. It's not uncommon to have 4.5-inch screens. In fact, 30% of new Android devices sold in the past, I think like 4 to 5 months, were 4.5 inches or higher. So our traditional definition of what a smartphone is, this 3.5-inch screen, is really blurring. And as tablets continue to blur as well into smartphones and into laptops, it's just this really sort of muddled space, which is why I think, A, we really need to think about adaptive multi-device designs, because it's very hard now to quadrant things off, right? We sort of have to make sure that we work on a full range of screens, regardless of what people may label them. As I sort of alluded to, some of these terms like phomblet or tab top or whatever people are calling them, it's sort of becoming silly to a certain extent, right? To go back to the question with that context in mind, when people say, well, does phone equal phone or tablet or both? The way I like to think about mobile is what enables mobility? That is, what size screen and computer can you conveniently carry with you? can you sort of interact with the palm of your hand anywhere and everywhere? And, you know, for different people, that cutoff is a different size, depending on your sort of human ergonomics. But it definitely isn't a single point in the spectrum. It's sort of a wider point in the spectrum. So when we look at studies of how people use traditional iPad-sized tablets, which is about a 9.7-inch screen, about a 10-inch screen, for those, only 6% of iPad sessions are actually on cellular networks. Whereas for a Android or iPhone smartphone, it's in the high 40%, so 45, 42% of all network connections are on cellular networks, which means the smartphones are definitely getting out there on mobile networks a lot more than the 10-inch tablets are. Also, I believe 30% of time spent on the iPad is on the couch and 20% is spent in the bedroom. So it's really, by those factors, more of a mobile-in-the-home device. Now, as you start to get to smaller and smaller tablet sizes, that is, you start getting down to more of the 7-inch range, all of a sudden these things start to become a lot more portable and thereby mobile. Right? So I don't think you can say mobile equals tablet, right? Because there's this wide range of tablets. And I don't think you can necessarily mobile equals smartphone because there's a wide range of smartphones. I think you have to look a lot more at the modes of use and are they really mobility driven, right? Are these things that people are taking with them anywhere and everywhere and using them as a mobile device as opposed to sort of the industry term for these devices?
Luke, what are your thoughts on the responsive design experience versus the MDOT experience?
Yep, and this is a very good follow-on question to what we were just talking about, right? Because this sort of continuous range of screen sizes and variants and sort of differences between mobile devices, bleeding into tablets, bleeding into laptops. It's really, really hard, as I was saying earlier, to sort of draw lines between things. And what responsive design allows you to do is build an adaptive layout that, you know, if a 5.5-inch screen or a 6-inch screen hits my website, really doesn't matter to me. The layout's just going to work well in both. If a 10-inch tablet or an 8-inch tablet hits it, it doesn't really matter. It's going to lay out really nicely. When people really talk about that sort of adaptive interface versus a MDOT experience, with the MDOT experience, unless you're building your MDOT experience responsively, you're really missing out on a lot of that fluidity and that adaptiveness and that possibility for your web service to work on a wide range of devices that's ever increasing. So I personally think the benefits of that fluidity and flexibility outweigh some of the benefits of a separate MDOT experience today. It used to be a little bit different because all you had to contend with, as I was saying earlier, was like the 3.5, you know, up to 4-inch smartphone size as mobile. Now that mobile's definition is totally blurring, as we've been talking about, I don't think you can really get away with isolating things that concretely.
Say a bit about the pros and cons of mobile applications versus responsive UIs.
Yep. Here I'm going to interpret mobile application. I'm going to interpret it in two ways. And so I'll answer this question sort of twice, depending on how people view mobile app. And the first one, I'll just sort of say a kind of MDOT experience, as we were talking about previously. That is a website or application on the web designed specifically just for this assumed definition of mobile, which is probably just the smartphone thing, versus a more adaptive, responsive UI. When you compare and contrast those two things, I like to use a travel analogy, which is if you're going on a trip and frankly, you don't know what the weather's going to be like. You don't know if it's going to be really sunny. You don't know if it's going to be really cold. You really don't know. What you do when you pack is you bring stuff that you can be really warm in. You bring stuff that is, you know, comfortable if it's hot out. And that's how responsive designs work. They come with a bunch of stuff that prepares them for any situation. In today's device ecosystem, that's usually a very, very good thing. But if you know specifically where you're going when you're traveling, right? I'm going to the beach. It's going to be 72 and sunny for a week. You can really optimize how you pack and just bring the stuff you need, which is what a mobile-specific website allows you to do. And in particular, the thing that that is a benefit to for website and web application producers and development design teams is really around optimization. That is, if I'm only packing the images and the markup and the JavaScript that I'm going to use for mobile, I don't have to bring all the other stuff for the other devices, so I can really optimize stuff. And I think that's where these separate mobile web experiences still have a bit of an edge over responsive designs, is they, by their nature, are just simpler and smaller because they're only targeting a certain class of device. Whereas the responsive designs are, by their nature, more robust because they're targeting every single kind of device. Now, there's definitely a lot that you can do to make responsive sites more performant and get some of that optimization, but it doesn't come, quote unquote, for free like it does with a separate set of templates and site. So that's kind of answer one if we interpret mobile app as something on the web. If we interpret mobile app as something that's native to an operating system, that is a native mobile application, not running on the web, but running on a particular platform like iOS or Android, then the pros and cons list is a little bit different. The way you then think about the benefits of these native applications is really you look at it as richness. What can I use to create a richer, better experience that comes from that native platform? Because you'll be able to get closer to the metal, you'll be able to use hardware more, you'll be able to use, you know, different aspects of the software will be more performant because they're compiled and running natively. The benefits of a responsive design then, instead of richness, are really around reach, which means every modern sort of device platform these days comes with a really good browser, way better browser than we've ever had before. So when you build something for the web, you're building something for every single platform, which gives you way more reach than an application you build only for a single platform. And I think, you know, that's sort of the simplest way I can sort of classify the native versus web argument for mobile devices and beyond. Spot richness and responsive web designs are all about reach. And there's good reasons for doing both, right? So it's not really a this versus that. It's really understanding your goals and determining what makes the most sense for what you're trying to accomplish.
Luke, in a responsive web design, aren't we giving everyone the same site? How do you account for different use cases on different devices?
Yeah, it's a very good question, right? Like the assumption is since I'm serving the same HTML, markup, CSS, and images everywhere, every single device, whether it's a smartphone or tablet or a desktop or a laptop, is going to get the exact same website and content. The counter argument to this often is, well, don't people use desktops and laptops differently, right? Aren't smartphones and tablets used in different ways? And the answer is, yeah, absolutely. They are used in different ways. But the fundamentals of what makes your site or application valuable to people doesn't change because the screen size changes. And so let me give an example for this. I was on a panel a while back at this mobile conference, and there were a couple folks representing the airline industry. And they were making sort of the argument that, hey, our mobile experiences are really different because what people do on airline sites on mobile is they spend a lot of time booking sort of last-minute travel. That is, they book flights that are within 48 hours of departure. And we really don't see that much of that on the desktop. And my counter-argument to this was like, great, okay, that's awesome you have that data and you understand this difference, but what are they doing on the desktop? Well, they're booking flights. So fundamentally, they're booking flights in both places. In mobile, they may be sort of more in a rush, so you may want a more streamlined, a more focused, a faster flow. You may want to limit options and things like this. But underneath the surface, the value you're providing people across all those screens is around booking flights. And this is where, you know, an adaptive design can actually help, because what you can do in the smaller screen experience is sort of reprioritize and rearrange some of the elements to take into account these different use cases. And then when you shift up to larger screen size, you can sort of reshuffle that priority and move things around a little bit more. It doesn't necessarily mean you have a totally different website, right? All you're doing is taking this core use case of book and flights and adjusting it a bit to what makes the most sense on each device, essentially optimizing it through adaptive design for different use cases. So I actually think, you know, a responsive and an adaptive interface is a benefit in these kinds of use cases, in these kinds of differing use cases, as opposed to a con. One other example, just to sort of drive this home, because I know this gets discussed a lot, so it's worth drilling into a bit. But another common example of where people cite mobile behavior as different from desktop and laptop behavior is if somebody has sort of a physical location, like a museum, right? It's not uncommon for them to see in their logs that people on mobile tend to go to the visiting hours, driving directions, and sort of parking information type pages. So there's a higher mode of use of those sorts of pages and information on mobile than there is on, say, desktop or laptop. But that doesn't mean that somebody on a laptop or a tablet doesn't want to see driving directions or hours, right? That doesn't mean that somebody on a smartphone doesn't want to see pictures of the exhibit or, you know, the calendar of events. It just means that the relative priority of content is a little bit different. So what you could do with an adaptive layout is sort of make the driving directions and hours button big on a small screen view, and then make it a little bit smaller as you adapt your layout to a big screen view. And again, you account for these different sort of priorities of content, but at the same time, you're not excluding any content from anybody just because of their screen size or device type.
So Luke, is there requirements for making sites more adaptive and doing so for more devices and differing devices? Will we reach a point where the code and infrastructure needed to support this decreases the site responsiveness to undesirable levels and quality becomes an issue and usability becomes an issue?
Yeah, so this goes right back to the sort of analogy I made at the beginning, right? Of the packing everything you need because you don't know what you'll find on the other end. And when you do that, naturally, you're bringing more stuff, right? The suitcase is heavier. It takes a little bit more effort to lug it through the airport and those kinds of things. And if you pack way too excessively, then you might not even be able to get your suitcase into the airport. Or to really stretch the metaphor, they might not even put it on the plane because it's too heavy. So when the sort of adaptive and responsive methodologies first came out, it was really around the, I hate to say this almost, but it was really around the cool factor of being able to adjust the layout and have a different layout on a different screen size, which is very useful, and you can use that to optimize sort of the interaction and visual design of things. But oftentimes, it was a net negative for performance. And over again, we see, you know, the faster you can make websites and web applications, the better your metrics skew. So like reducing 100 milliseconds of load time can lead to more conversion, more revenue, more engagement, more page views, all that good stuff. And so the very strong concern here is if I start to do responsive stuff, am I negating all those performance values because I'm bringing on all this additional stuff? Now, while these responsive methodologies really started with these layout examples, the conversation these days and increasingly over the past year is all about performance. How can we make sure that we are, in fact, delivering the right level of file size, not bringing over unused assets, being judicious about how we load assets and those sorts of things? And there's a lot of patterns of things like AJAX include, which sort of picks which content to load on which screen or defers loading on content or just more smartly loads content that are really bringing the conversation to making site responsiveness more and more desirable, to sort of use the language of the question. And I think when you do this sort of methodology, you just got to keep your eye on the performance prize, right? You can't ignore optimization and speed and sort of download and all those things that, you know, we've been focused on a lot on the web. And that doesn't go away just because you have a responsive design. You may, in fact, have to learn new techniques for getting there. Being a little daunting, but got to be done, right?
So, Luke, my recollection is there were a bunch of people that were looking for some advice on media query breakpoints. And one in particular I thought was a really good one. Do you make those decisions based on content or the devices?
Yep. So just to bring everybody to speed up on what we mean by media query breakpoints, this is sort of in an adaptive design, responsive design, when do you decide to change your layout? You sort of hit some threshold of screen size. The way a lot of people used to do this was they would sort of say, okay, well, at 320 pixels, because that's an iPhone, I'll have a different layout. And at 1024 pixels, because that's an iPad, I'll have a different layout. And so they made these adjustments based on the current dimensions of popular devices. That's why I use the iPhone and iPad as an example there. But if you go back to the very beginning when we were talking about, you know, how all these different form factors and sizes of devices are coming out and more of them are emerging every single day, that doesn't really become a long-term sustainable model. Because, you know, let's say the next iPhone is 360 pixels or the Galaxy Note takes off and it's 720 pixels. And just you find yourself in this sort of rat race with the device market of what's popular, what's not, and kind of trying to tie what your design is doing to a series of manufacturer specifications. What you can do instead of trying to, you know, look at these breakpoints at where the popular device screen sizes are, you can look at them as where does my design actually break? And it doesn't really matter what screen size it's on. It's just as I'm sort of gradually looking at it on different viewports, when it hits a point where something becomes unreadable, something becomes sort of, you know, overly, how shall I say, overly ugly, I guess. It looks wrong. That's a place where your layout is broken. So you can take this term breakpoint literally and say, look, people can't read this. It's broken. Oh, this is just ugly. It's broken. That's where I need to insert a breakpoint. And so you sort of use those breakpoints as content driven, right? Where my layout or my content fails to work, it's a breakpoint and I need to make an adjustment to my layout so it works better. And I think that's a lot more future friendly than sticking to the current landscape of device sizes when you think about this.
One of our attendees made the point that small windows are different than small screens and wondered if you make different design choices for those different experiences.
Yep. You know, I think this is actually a real nice question to wrap everything up that we've been talking about so far. Because as we've been talking about, right, small screens and different kinds of screens can actually have different use cases. So adapting our layouts based on those use cases and reprioritizing and reorganizing information can help address the small screen problem, if you will. The adaptive designs and adaptive layouts of responsive web design, as we were just talking about a second ago around basing these off of content, can address the small windows principle. That is, whatever size window you happen to encounter, you can adapt your layout to it. So I don't think these two things are mutually exclusive. In fact, I think together they form a really great methodology for dealing with multiple device design, because you're not just looking at screen size, you're also looking at how people actually use these devices. But at the same time, you're making sure that it works on every single screen size. So it's sort of a win-win on both sides. And for that reason, you know, I'm really excited about where this stuff is going and how it can really reshape what we've been doing on the web over all these years.
Very cool. Awesome stuff, Luke. Thanks for coming back to join us for a bit to talk a little bit more about this.
My pleasure. Hope it has been useful for everyone.
Yeah, and to our audience, you know, if there's a need for mobile design resources and information, you would be doing yourselves a great favor by going to Luke's site, lukew.com. It's loaded with Luke's thinking, lots of great statistics, and all kinds of stuff in this fast-moving, fast-changing environment. So go check that out. Thanks for listening, and thanks for your support of the UIE Virtual Seminar Program. Goodbye for now.
Purchase access to recordings of all of our previous virtual seminars in our virtual seminar catalog. Just go to uie.com/virtual_seminars. As always, thank you for listening.